Welcome to Business with Beers, a podcast for business owners who want to scale their business to massively grow their income and contribution by investing in people, process, and technology. I am your host, Brian Beers. This week, we've got Sergio Altimore from Hearthfire Holdings. Welcome to the show.
What's happening? Glad to be here, Brian. Thank you.
Yeah, great, great. Thanks for hopping on here. So this wouldn't be Business with Beers if I didn't ask you if it wasn't COVID and me and you could have a drink in a bar. What are we going to have?
What would we have?
Yeah. What's your favorite beer?
I'm not a big beer drinker these days just because it puts a lot of, does wonders on the inches on my waist, and I don't need that to go in that direction. So I'd probably be a bourbon drink, a Manhattan.
Okay.
An old fashioned, something like that. Yeah. Something in a nice swanky, what might've once been a smoky kind of, steakhouse joint. That's my scene.
All right, old cool.
Jazz bar, maybe.
That's fun. Any bourbon in particular?
No, I'm not really a connoisseur, but I mean, I won't drink like crap. I mean, I'll have some Woodford Reserve, some, you know, Maker's 46. Mix it up a little bit.
Great, great. All right, so share your story. Who you are, what you do, how'd you get here?
So my story is an interesting one in that I started working for the Federal Reserve while I was in high school. I was 18 and just started as an intern. I wasn't really a great student in high school. I eventually became a great student when I went back to college. But my story basically started as an intern. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, with career-wise. I stumbled into IT, where I just bought a computer and had problems with it from the day I bought it. And so I decided to try and fix it myself. And so I kind of spent my nights and weekends kind of ripping it apart, putting it back together. I eventually landed a job with the IT department at the Fed. And I worked my way up from an IT support person all the way up to an officer in 2017. Along the way, I had probably 9 jobs, you name the facet of IT, and I worked in it. A lot of time spent in like project management, information security, network engineering, that kind of thing. So along the way, I met my now wife in 2012. Her family background is in investing. Her father was an attorney, mom a Montessori teacher. So they didn't have the conventional W-2 jobs where you go the same path to, you know, establishing retirement accounts. So they basically instilled in her a more of an investment mentality, buy some real estate, live in a unit, rent out the others. So we were dating at the time. She moved in with me. She was in between leases where she was buying a property and living with a kind of a shared house with other musicians. My wife professional musician, opera singer. That's a whole nother interesting story. So I helped her connecting in Philadelphia with friends of mine in the real estate industry. She bought a triplex. We had to renovate the unit she was going to live in. As things were going well enough with us and we got the renovation done, we said, well, why don't we just rent out the other unit and you stay living with me? And so we did. Being that my background was in IT, I quickly started implementing systems to manage the property. We bought another triplex the following year. Next thing you know, we started getting into syndication. And if you don't know what real estate syndication is, it's basically pooling investor money together, acquiring properties. The lead syndicator or sponsor, which is us in our case, does all the management and everything. Everybody else is a passive investor, just kind of collects cash flow from the property performance. We did that from 2014 to 2017. With my background working at the Fed, I recognize that, you know, I've always been close to economic cycles, boom and bust cycles. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was a recession coming on 2017. Somewhere around that time frame, we were looking to get into bigger apartment buildings. Every time I did the analysis on the properties, I just couldn't make the numbers work. There were and still is a lot of stupid money being thrown around in real estate, especially in the apartment industry. So we decided, okay, well, maybe it's time that we start selling off some of these properties that have done really well, recapitalize our investors, and make a pivot. Along the way, Corinne had quit the day job in 2016. We had built a portfolio of like 50 doors under management. We had a baby on the way. She quit 2016. We started making the pivot towards self-storage. 2017 is when we started thinking about it. And really, it's because of self-storage is recession resistant, or considered recession resistant, did really well 2008. We started selling off those properties. 2017 is when I quit the day job. We acquired our first self-storage facility in 2019. This is out in the Lancaster, Pennsylvania market. 24,000 square foot facility. Quickly got on board with learning the ropes of self-storage. And then we made a pivot or continued down that path, I should say, and quickly scaled. And we just closed on the end of January on three more properties in the Lancaster community. That's just about a $10 million project when you factor in one of the facilities has some expansion capability. So we're all in. Other things that we do, we still have our property management business. We do really well there in terms of providing top end services, just because we're, you know, investors ourselves. So we manage properties a little different. And then we have our operations team handling self-storage. And now I get to focus on more big picture, putting people in the right position and just keep growing, man. That's the quick and dirty.
Yeah, that's a great story. Yeah. Quitting your W-2 job, right? Safe and secure, and then going all in on being being your own boss and doing your own thing. So that's great. So your property management company, how many properties do you currently manage? Or what do they look like?
I don't know the exact number. It's over 100 doors now. And you know, we really just started historically, we were just kind of managing for a smaller network of people that were kind of in our network. Some of our existing investors came on board with us that way. Corinne's parents, they sold some properties in California, bought some properties out here. So we took on them. And now we recently, over the last year, I would say we started focus on really growth. We have all the systems in place. We have the back end, the tech stack all figured out, the processes, and we really do it well. So just over, I think, 20, somewhere between 20 and 40 properties, and then over 100 units right now.
Okay. And where's your focus going next? Is it continuing the self storage through syndication? Is that the yep. focus?
Yeah. So we've been able to build what I consider really a rock star team for that self-storage business. And it includes everything from the acquisition to identification of properties, underwriting, acquisitions, investor relations, building the capital stack, getting financing, and then ultimately the operations. I mean, we have a really, really deep team that has a lot of experience, and so that's the focus right now. I still feel that the market is a little iffy. We're actually starting to see some cracks in the residential tenant space. Really, actually, interesting enough, pretty recently, already this February has been kind of a little rocky so far.
And, which and is really rent odd. Collection, or what's the cracks you're seeing?
Yeah. I mean, rent collections. It's not a big number. 3-4 folks that are late, but that's not something we're accustomed to. And then we're starting to hear people a little bit more sensitive and you know, basically talking about COVID being, you know, having some form of an impact. So yeah. Hopefully it's just a little blip and not something that's going to grow and be systemic, but that's my job, is to keep a pulse on it and see where we need to go.
Yep. What's the biggest challenge in running self-storage? Is it the operations? Is it?
I think it's you know, for us, it's not necessarily a challenge. When the value add that we look for is inefficiencies and not having the right management systems in place. So for us, I mean, it's a lot of it's technology, right? So having everything from a tenant being able to find your facility online, go to your website, be able to see what you have available, make a reservation, rent a unit, execute documents electronically, pay electronically through mobile phone, whatever. So we look for properties that are missing that piece or at least not utilizing.
So they do it all manually. They got a call to know if anything's available. The person walks them there, right? It's all all totally manual.
Yeah. And today's customer is, you know, just wants to be able to use their phone, look it up. They want quick and easy access. So for us, you know, when we acquire property, there's the challenge of one is communicating out to the existing customers that, you know, this is what we're going to be doing. Along with all that comes increases in rents, increases in what we call street prices, which is the marketing of vacant units. And then from there, some of the bigger challenges are collections. You know, some people, you know, forget, you know, life circumstances happen and paying for your storage unit generally is not the number one priority. So it happens. But the good thing about self-storage is that there are regulated by lien laws and not by landlord tenant type of stuff. So 60 days go and it varies by state. 60 days pass and then I have the ability to just claim my lien and put it, you know, put a unit up for auction and, you know, reclaim the unit. So
how often does that happen?
I would say it's probably per facility 4 or 5 per year.
Okay.
So and we try to like, you know, we do something else that we do is online auction. So basically have somebody take a picture of the contents of the unit. You can't go roaming through it. It's not like Storage Wars where, you know, you have this auctioneer and everything. Yeah. Those days are gone. So there are some facilities that still do that, but it's a pretty straightforward process now.
Yeah. And what's interesting too, it's more like running a business than it is. I mean, you're buying real estate, but the real estate becomes the business. So it's definitely, it's not passive for you guys by any means, right? Compared to other forms of investment.
Yeah. And there's a lot of opportunity to add the efficiencies to automation. Like you can, you know, automate notices and things like that. There is a physical requirement and doing your walkthroughs to check on the, you know, physical, you know, conditions of the properties is clean. And in our case right now is, you know, snow removal and that kind of thing. So, you can pretty much manage multiple properties with less and less resources, the more you have the technology in place. So, but yes, it is, it's very much a business. We're, you know, looking at P&Ls, we're looking at constantly adjusting pricing. I would say the closest industry to self-storage from a model standpoint is probably, I always go back to the hotel industry, maybe even airline because of the dynamic pricing capabilities and, you know, having to really keep a pulse on what you're charging, what you should be charging and trying to keep expenses under control as much as possible.
And so for your expansion strategy, is it to stay in that similar market of central PA and try to control as much of the market share as you can, or is it, you know, you're going to go anywhere and, you know, leverage all the resources you got?
Yeah, because we keep operations in-house and we want to control that aspect, because the more you control, you know, this is true for most real estate, the more aspects of a business and deal that you can control and keep in-house, the better you're going to, the more efficiency, the better margins you're going to get. So I'm a firm believer that until you exhaust your market, and we're nowhere near that, then it makes sense to stay there. We're also looking to build a portfolio of property. So the portfolio will be, we continually grow it regardless of who's in whatever deal. We can grow the portfolio. We're in a process of going to be rebranding all of the facilities, establish that one brand. So we're also trying to build the business to where each facility can support and help grow the others. So if you have one brand, now you have multiple locations, right? So a potential customer can be steered in any direction. And then we're also looking to for ancillary businesses as well that are complementary, whether it be, you know, the things like selling locks and the sales aspect of it. That's typical in storage.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we've tried that, but that's less and less of a a good strategy when it comes to self-storage, because it's not a physical in-person come into the facility, at least not the facilities that we're at. And then we also our strategy is to stay away from primary markets where the big REITs are at, where there's ultra high competition, where the supply side can outgrow the demand. I mean, so we're in like secondary, tertiary markets. We love the where Lancaster is positioned right now, just because the proximity to New York, Philly, DC, it's centralized. COVID has forced a lot. Well, COVID has changed the dynamic where people that were in a city because of work or whatever now are working remotely, in some cases, probably permanently. So they want to be out in, you know, greener country, if you will. And so it's kind of pushing a lot of people out there. And it's not a market that we're hearing huge headlines about, but the demographic, the population shift is there, and quite honestly, it's beautiful out there. So, we're still working out there. There's a lot of facilities that fit the profile of what we're looking for in terms of size, location, fit our model. So that's going to be the strategy going forward.
And then, how do you get in contact? Is it cold call, door knocking, mailers? Yeah,
that's never been my strategy. I'm not the, you know, pick up the phone and war dial. That's never been me. I mean, I tried that. I have a real estate license with Keller Williams. And I took a class once where that was the expectation, is to make 100 contacts per week, and, you know, and sitting there calling and people don't answer the phone and are rude. And that's never been my style, you know, going directly to owners. That's hit or miss. Time is too precious to me. So at some point we may bring some of that in house, but right now it's relationships with brokers, trying, you know, as you become an established buyer and have a reputation for being able to close deals. And in this case, now we have a portfolio. So having that ability to close when you're working with a broker that, and in our case, specializes in self-storage, then we're more likely to either be at the top of the list when they have a new listing or a pocket listing or what have you, and then just be able to get first crack at it. Even if it's just a, not necessarily an exclusive view, but at least get a head start in evaluating things. We're going to be, you know, when something hits the market, we'll be in a better position to make an offer and close a deal.
Just kind of wait until they're ready to sell and then hoping you're the first call or to get a first stab at it.
Yeah. I mean, and every phase of a market cycle, there's always buyers and sellers right now. I mean, self-storage is like every other asset class right now. Everything is still hot. I mean, COVID was supposed to cause a deep recession. And I think the only sector that really is hurting, aside from like major metropolitan areas, are office, some retail, that kind of thing. So for us, you know, it's still heated, but we know our model. Our operations team can squeeze more value than another operator can.
Why not? I mean, you don't want to make those calls, but why not get somebody on your team to do it? To reach out to these guys.
I mean, we are exploring that. It's more that, you know, there's enough owners out there. There's two trains of thought. Those that want the highest that they can get, so they're going to work with a broker. And we find that they're the brokers, you know, the Marcus and Millichaps, CBREs, these guys have teams of people doing that. And then there are some people out there that want to sell, you know, that don't want to be bothered with a broker. However, the brokers are in their ears regularly telling them how much more that they can get. So the competition is a little challenging there. And it's something that we have talked about, you know, bringing in somebody in specifically for that. We just haven't had to do it up until now, but it is something that we definitely will be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, because I mean, if you have this team, you can raise money, you can execute, and just getting in these guys' ears that, you know, even if they're not ready now, you might spark something, and, you know, people buy from people they like, and you become the face, right? Rather than just this broker and this name that they may never meet until later.
And one of the strategies that we had there is, and COVID put a damper on things, is being more active in the self-storage industry. Self-storage is a little different, or a lot different, I should say, than a lot of other real estate sectors, in that it's local based, and the communities, everybody seems to know each other, and you tend to know the owner. So we were attending like the Pennsylvania Self-Storage Association conferences and all these meetups where there are other owners and you can get in front of people, but obviously that's not happening now. So, but get it, you know, some of the other things that we do is try to focus on being, you know, thought leaders and an authority in the industry, you know, provide help and guidance to your point. And if somebody's not ready to sell just yet and they know that, you know, they have confidence in what we know and that we're good, solid people and looking to do the right thing and, you know, looking for win-win situations, then the hope is that we'll land some more of that.
How do you go about executing on being that thought leader? Is it through, do you have a newsletter or something you're trying to share best practices?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. It's all of the above. Corinne actually, she's co-authored The Only Woman in the Room, which is a book of comprised of all women that have, you know, are real estate investors. She wrote a storage, a chapter on self-storage. That book is was a number one bestseller in real estate on Amazon. Check it out if you haven't already. It's a really good book. I try to go on podcasts as much as possible. Believe it or not, my wife is actually the one that is on a lot more podcasts and things that I am. I'm a contributing editor for Bigger Pockets. So I read some articles on LinkedIn. Obviously, all of our content and you know, appearances and articles are in on our website. I also do some coaching. I have a small handful of clients that it's not just about self-storage. It's about, you know, personal growth. A lot of it is certainly tied to real estate and becoming an investor, becoming a better investor and that kind of thing. So we really enjoy the coaching outreach education part of it. And so, I mean, you know, a big part of it is knowing the business ourselves. I mean, I'm not renting units anymore, but we know the industry, we know what it takes. I know how to, you know, go into my systems, look to see how things are performing. So, and just sharing all that, really goes a long way in becoming that.
Yeah. I mean, that platform and educating and inspiring others. And, you know, if you can help them move along, introduce some of these old school guys to some technology, right. Yep. And help make them more profitable. Like I said, that creates the relationships and when they're ready, I mean, you'll be the guy, at least, you know, get a shot at it. So
yep.
I think that's all great and part of a good plan there. So cool. Well, so that's what's next, huh? Just kind of continue to grow that, grow the property business. Got to have a great team, right? I mean, that's how you do it. You can't do it all yourself. So.
Yeah. And that I think is probably the hardest thing that I've had to learn and I'm still not there is how to hire right for the right roles at the right time. And even after doing that, putting the person in a position to succeed, right? I've always been the one on the being trained side of things and wanting to gain knowledge. And so trying to, if somebody comes in, regardless of their skill set, regardless of where they come from, unless it's a direct fit to doing the same job, if they're not trained or brought on board properly, then they're not there. They may not be successful. And then it's more of a reflection on me. Yep. So unfortunately we've had to move through a lot of people over the years, just because probably in hindsight, it's more of for a lack of our ability to understand what we need, what our expectations are. Not everybody learns the same way. So I'm really trying to focus and become a better leader and a better executive and really taking a step back and looking at the big picture and really doing that. That's been a big focus and it's been eye-opening because as we've gotten better at it, I'm starting to see, okay, I don't need to be involved in everything. I can just take a step back and focus on big picture, you know, strategy and direction. So that's a really big shift that I've had to learn.
Have you read Traction?
I have it on, I believe I have it on my Kindle and it's like third on my list to read.
Yeah. So I definitely check it out. There's a lot of it will resonate with you. It's about, you know, finding the right people. So you define the right people by core values. So like, you know, what are your core values? For us, it's, you know, integrity and that they're driven and that they, you know, have leadership qualities. They're accountable. right? Like, because there's things you can't really train, right? Someone's driven or they're not, right? Someone has integrity or they don't. So you get the right people, then it's defining, like, get those right people in the right seats. So you may have the right person, but if they have the wrong position, they don't succeed. You know, in our business, it could be a manager that should be an assistant, or, you know, assistant that maybe should be a manager, right? There's different levels of, you know, management skills and all that plays a part.
And then there's a lot of it where you think you bring somebody, you bring in a resource because you think it's going to plug and fill a need. And then maybe that alignment's not there, or maybe you're like, holy crap, I'm filling the wrong position. Right. And so it's and there's that sequence. Yep. Right. And that's something that definitely is an interesting, you know, I've read all kinds of books on the subject, and it's like one thing to get the knowledge, another is like to implement and execute all that.
Move traction up on your list. You'll gain a lot from that. It's, you know, EOS, they call it, Entrepreneur Operating System. It's like, you know, and it's, you define like clear roles and responsibilities. Like, so for this role, this is like, these are the expectations. This is the end result. This is what we want to see. And the more clear you get on that, that position, the easier it becomes to kind of, you know, visualize in your mind, and then finding that person then fits it. Sometimes we know there's like a task or two, but we don't see the whole role. Yeah. So, but yeah, it's, you know, hiring people is the biggest challenge I think we all face. And you're right that if they fail quickly, it's our fault, right? Yep. It's not their fault, because we either hired the wrong person or we didn't clearly set the expectations.
That's for sure. And then kind of looking through the BS, right? I mean, some people are really good. I mean, over the years, I mean, people can knock it out of the park at an interview. And then it's especially back in my IT days, right? You can pass a bunch of tests and get a bunch of certification, but I put you in front of a computer and you don't know what you're doing, right? So that's
And sometimes you got to take a chance on people. Sometimes you don't know, right? I mean, that's all part of the art of it is, from the beginning, getting people excited about it and, you know, rewarding that success and trying to create that culture that they win together, and, you know, they're learning and growing in one dimension or another. So, that's exciting though. I mean, that's all part of growing your team and, you know, hopefully build this big empire of self-storage and properties and the ancillary businesses. I don't know, U-Haul could be a good avenue, and a lot of self guys.
Yeah. The U-Haul, we've looked at it, and the folks that have said that say that they make a lot of money aren't really telling the truth. I mean, U-Haul takes a huge cut of it. You know, the maintenance, there's a lot of headaches that go with it. Most of it is just to get to another way to attract tenants, but, it's not, we've looked at it, and every time we've looked at it, it's like, no, don't go there.
Cool. Any book recommendation? I know you mentioned your wife's one. What was that one called again?
The Only Woman in the Room. The Only Woman.
Okay. We'll make sure we link up that. Any other books that you think?
I'm a big self-help kind of person. You know, my wife is actually reading right now, and it kind of stuck to my mind because she's in this, getting more mindful mode right now. The Warrior Within is, and this is like, you know, totally off topic, but just popped on my head. Warrior Within is, you know, Bruce Lee. Okay. And most people see Bruce Lee as a, you know, martial artist, you know, actor, you know, back in the day. He's actually a philosopher. And it's like, you know, just more of life philosophies, Eastern versus Western culture and the differences. So I'm a big believer in getting your mind right. Another something that started me on becoming more mindful, it's more of a commercialization of mindfulness and meditation. The Secret kind of like started me down a path of mindfulness. Any books on meditating is really good. I'm a firm believer. If you get your mind right, you get clarity, you slow your brain down, you have more capacity there, and then you can always, you know, and then from that standpoint, as whatever you are learning, you retain, and then you can execute. Because a lot of people read and it goes in one ear, you know, out the other, and they do nothing with the information. So it's a big, for me, I'm a big believer. If I, I'm going to pick up a book and there's something to be learned from it, I'm going to implement it, I'm going to execute. So that's a big part. And then there's obviously, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. There are the staples or the Bibles, The Richest Man in Babylon, Those are kind of the, you know, don't pass go, like all my coaching students. That's my Rich Dad Poor Dad is probably one of the first books I recommend that they read. It's just get that investor mindset as opposed to, you know, employee or work mindset. So,
yep. Yeah. All great books. And yeah, I've been on a more mindful path as well over the past year and trying to learn how to meditate and all that stuff. And it takes time too. And, but I can see an impact. So you got to commit to it and you got to be consistent. So
yeah, for sure.
Cool. So how can people connect with you, find out more about your company?
My email address is Sergio@hfireholdings.com. Go to our website, sign up on our mailing list. We're not the spammy type. We provide education. We provide a lot of events. I'm on LinkedIn, trying to get off of Facebook, but we do have company pages on all the social media platforms. So
yeah, we'll put them all in the show notes. So, all right, great. Well, thanks for coming on today and sharing your story. And, you know, we look forward to seeing what's next.
Hey man, Brian, I appreciate it and good luck with everything and the show, man.
All right. I'll talk to you.
I hope that you enjoyed listening to this episode of Business with Beers. My goal with every episode is to help inspire you to reach new levels of success in your own business and life. So start taking action today. And in order to help this podcast reach more people, please rate, review, and share. To connect with me on Instagram and Twitter, check out the links in the show notes. And until next time, have a great day.